the culture of the high-profile company that pops up on the stock market in the morning.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace Podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Once the short message social media company known as Twitter becomes a public company tomorrow, it'll have pressure from outside, which could turn its existing internal culture on its head. Audrey Quinn begins our coverage.
In Silicon Valley, you're either cutting edge or you're profitable, which makes some Twitter developers nervous about going public. Susan Ettlinger is a tech industry analyst with Altimeter Group.
It's a very common dynamic that companies like Twitter will have employees who feel that the original mission is shifting or that they used to have a lot more autonomy than they do now.
But she thinks the hand-wringing's been overblown.
I don't see any indication that strategy has changed in any meaningful way in the last 3 months from where it was, you know, a year ago.
Jeremy Levine's with Bessemer Venture Partners in New York. He says as Twitter increases its focus on revenue, it risks becoming less innovative.
As you become successful, you go from being the attacking disruptor to a target for other disruptors. And that's really nerve-wracking for an executive team.
And that could be Twitter's next real challenge, nurturing new ideas at the same time it nurtures an income stream. In New York, I'm Audrey Quinn for Marketplace.
Twitter increased its target price for its new stock. It's now thinking $23 to $25 would be about right. A deal or a steal? Melody Hobson is president of Ariel Investments in Chicago. Melody, great to hear your voice back on the Morning Report.
It's a good morning. Happy to be back.
So, big market story of the week is that brand new stock that hits the market tomorrow. We were just talking about Twitter, the big 21st century brand. Can I interest you in actually buying this thing when it becomes available tomorrow?
No, you couldn't interest me at all. When anything gets that hyped and when there's that much attention to it, all I think about is what could go wrong. I like stocks that are out of favor, that people don't like, and that are undiscovered. And the frenzy around Twitter is the expectations are just way, way too high.
I was just talking to an IPO expert who was talking about, well, we'll have to watch their revenue growth and the expansion of their subscriber base. The word he didn't mention was profits.
That's right. We're back to those days like the late 90s when they talked about eyeballs, you know, where they're measuring things other than profit. And of course, at the end of the day, that's the only thing that matters. And they have yet to have a real business model that explains what will drive profits for the company.
Now, we just heard a piece about the culture of business angle on Twitter, how the company is going to have to change internally when it becomes a public company. A lot of things may need to change over there, right?
There's no question about it. I mean, one big one, they're going to have a all-white male board. And for a 21st century company, you have to wonder about a company really going public with no women, no people of color, and really ask yourself, what are they thinking?
Twitter CEO seemed a little grumpy about this with critics, said diversity isn't just about ticking off a box by finding, say, a woman for the board. But there are plenty of possible candidates out there, right?
Well, the one thing is, of course there are, first of all. And then secondly, you have to ask yourself, do you understand your customer? So this is not about checking a box. It's about making sure that all voices are in the room when you're making very, very big decisions. And there are differences that men and women have, and people of color bring other perspectives that I believe are very helpful to companies over the long term, especially given the demographic changes of our country and the globalization of this world when it comes to everything, especially social media.
Melody Hobson, Ariel Investments. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
You've been hearing about Republican Chris Christie's 60 to 38% win for a second term as governor of New Jersey, and Democrat Terry McAuliffe's more narrow 48 to 45% victory in Virginia. Back in the landslide category, Bill de Blasio, the next mayor of New York City, he won 73% of the vote and becomes the first Democrat to run New York in nearly a quarter century by focusing on this theme.
That inequality that feeling of a few doing very well, while so many slip further behind. That is the defining challenge of our times.
Marketplace's Sabri Benishour is here with some numbers about the inequality that Mayor-elect de Blasio will inherit.
Well, according to the Census Bureau, income inequality in the New York City region is higher than any other major metropolitan region in the country. So taking the whole city, Brooklyn to the Bronx, if you are in the bottom 20% in New York, your income on average is about $9,000. If you are in the top 20%, you make on average $223,000. So otherwise put, the top 20% of the population makes about 25 times what the bottom 20% makes.
Now, can you give me a quick baseline for poverty in what will soon be de Blasio territory?
Well, the poverty rate is up. In 2007, before the recession hit, 18.5% of the residents of the city lived below the poverty level. In 2010, that went up to 20%, and in 2012, it was up to 21%. Now, that said, the Bloomberg administration points out that other cities saw poverty rates rise by more than that. And in the past decade or so, the city went from having the sixth highest poverty rate for big cities to the 13th.
Marketplace's Sabri Benishour, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And a legendary Chicago chef has died. Charlie Trotter made his restaurant Lincoln Park an immediate international sensation. Fanatical, fresh from the market was his thing. Plenty of veggies, to the point that the restaurant became an engine of tourism and economic development in Chicago. During an interview last year on this program, Trotter saw the economics this way.
Fine dining is the one luxury experience that's pretty much available to everyone, not every day or once a week, but maybe once a year, because it only costs something like $100 an hour for the experience. And it takes 80 people to do it, whereas even the lamest plumber charges $115 an hour, and he's by himself.
The chef closed Lincoln Park last year, saying he wanted time to write and to get a master's degree. Trotter was 54. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.